3D6 down the line.
Okay, that is episode 64 in the books. Left it on quite a cliffhanger, but you have only yourself to blame. So
I think it's going swimmingly so far.
I don't know that we've ever been this fucking boned before in this game.
And you've been boned a lot.
Astonishing. That's astonishing. And it always seems to be on this level.
It is, yes.
That was my point earlier.
So I'll tell you, you had excellent plans. Like everything was very, very well thought out. Like I can't poke holes in anything. Even it was pure random chance how things could have gone down completely differently. And that was literally when you walked into the Well of Light for the first time and you chose to go south rather than north. That was a huge, huge turning point in how everything just sort of steamrolled after that. Sure. I'll just put it that way. But it was literally like no fault of your own. Like you had multiple choices. You didn't hear anything from either direction, sure. And you decided to go towards towards the library or whatever. So
I, for one, have no regrets and still think we're going to succeed.
You never know.
I refuse to believe we're boned. I think we have him in our trap. Just you wait.
Sure. I mean, here's the thing about it. I think that we actually have, with the shotgun, a decent chance of really dinking up Garlad's plans, right? When we did it in that one room where there was like all those monkeys and one of the four-armed baboons, we almost killed that dude, right? We almost killed that big one and we killed all the little ones. And I just feel like if we, and Garlad, man, I mean, hit points being what they are in this game, maybe we won't drop him with a cone of cold. But damn, like, I mean, you get that thing full blast in the face and for somehow failure save or whatever, he could be totally screwed. And so, yes, David, I think to your point, we have a chance here. I don't see us escaping afterwards. That's kind of like the only real problem.
The gamble we're taking, which is a gamble that is very foolish, right? But part of the fun is that all or nothing killing Garlad will have some consequential effect on the apes. And that is a huge assumption. If it is not true, we're dead. Right. Garlad's dead, which is a win. If we're talking about like the macro, Ted gets out as a spider, right? Like Mike and David die again. What else is new? Right. But that's not a total failure. Now, if he does have an influence on them, that's great. But that means that I do think the Ice One's very powerful. I'm not going to use it unless your assassination attempt fails. Right. I don't think we do a single act of aggression until we have tried the Garlad move, because everything else will create distance between us, including just via apes protecting him. We're never going to get there, right? So it mandates, essentially, like, if we can't wait it out here, they haven't closed the door still. We walk into his bedroom and we stay there invisible, right? Until he comes back several hours later, which is foolish, but like you hide under his bed. I don't know, right? This is, it's silly, but it's something to consider because we know that the alarm is just continuous while the door's open. Right. And at some point, they have to turn the alarm off.
Right.
So like, can the apes turn their alarm off, or is Garlad the only person that can do it because it's a magical alarm? At which point, Garlad has to come here.
Yeah.
Period. So, like, there are a lot of very awesome distractions that we could pursue. But the reality is, like, every single one of them ruins the best leverage we have because we're basically dead regardless, unless we do a full retreat to the pyramid right now.
Well, let's be very specific about the actual situation we're in.
Sure.
There are six monkeys in the hallway with us, right?
Yeah.
And if we take them out, which you could with the wand, your invisibility is gone.
Yeah, which is why I'm not going to do it.
Right. But how long, eventually, if those guys are just posted up there and they're just there for hours, I'm going to run out of invisibility. You might run out of invisibility because Niall might be like, okay, I got to go. Or something else might happen, right?
Yeah, I mean, what I would say, and this is really a loyalty check thing maybe, or like a John's arbitration thing, but like you have two more charges on the cloak, just like you didn't use it until they came in. You don't have, if we go in, using that, not that we should, but hypothetically, right? Two baboons, four baboons, however many baboons go in to see if Ted's in the other room. right? There's a window, or not, depending on what happens, to move into his room before they close the door. For me, at least. Maybe both of us. We can hang out there. Like I said, you can be under his bed. I'm infinitely invisible as long as they don't leave. I don't think knowing what our plan was and knowing that no one can enter into the room or want to enter the room with Njal and Lisbeth, that they would bail, right? I think they would squat out for a while. But again, what's reasonable? That's a John thing. Now, point being is like they knew what the plan was enough to know that they wouldn't like spend 30 minutes and leave. They might spend a few hours and then leave, right? But there's no imminent threat to them because no one's coming that way. And they know they can go through the portal, right? Which is something we discussed with them at the time.
Right.
That's, I don't know. This gets too mad. My point is like, I you know, there's, it's nuanced, but
Njal and Lisbeth are probably not going to go anywhere because Njal is intimately familiar with the layout. And he knows for a fact what happens in that room. And he knows that the baboons generally tend to stay away from it. So even though Lisbeth is sort of stationed immediately outside, the baboons don't like to come that direction, and Njal knows it. So they're going to get worried, and they're at a certain point they're going to assume that something bad happened to you. Sure. But you're going to be in the dark as far as what they decide to do.
And the way we would know that they made that decision is I would become visible again.
Right.
Right,
like, Njal would get his vision back.
That's true. A very good point.
But the key there is like Lisbeth and I mean, what I said to Lisbeth was like not to stand in the hallway, just like out in the open. But if she needs to cast her spell, to go into the hallway to cast it. Right, like
just to be
clear, I wanted them to be like on the other side of the wall, not like in plain view of anyone going through those halls.
Yeah.
Right,
I'm just
like,
saying Njal knows that they're pretty safe. That they're relatively safe there.
Well, I think they are. So I think they would camp for a bit. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, they will.
Reasonably. Now, having said that, we don't know what happens turn by turn. We can't control anything, right? My point is just, you know, it's kind of all or nothing, right? Like in this scenario, it's kind of all or nothing. And I think the strongest position we have is where we're at, even though it is the most trapped we'll be. But that's the irony of it. That's like kind of the fun of it. Like it is really a death gamble in that way.
Ted, how do you feel about this?
Yeah. Oh, he's out. He's free, baby. He has no worries anymore.
Well, no, that's not entirely true.
How long does that spell last?
I don't know.
It's a potion. You should... So it's a. I rolled. I know how long it lasts.
Yeah.
Here's a key there. Sorry to interrupt, Ted. Yeah. We can just say, "Hey, Ted, go to Njal and Lisbeth and tell them what's going on." And Ted leaves.
It's going to take a long time for a little spider to get there.
Fair.
No, here's the thing. Fair. I mean, and David, don't take this the wrong way. I don't think you should open that door and set off the alarm. Like the smart move was we just waited it out until Geralt came to bed. You got it. You wanted something to happen. And this is a game, not an actual tactical situation.
Exactly.
So, and it definitely kicked everything in the pants. And now we have to deal with it. And I think you're smart to sit there and just be like, nope, I'm not fighting these monkeys. If they discover us, if they work out that we're here, fine, we go toe to toe and we take out what we can, go down swinging. Mort lives to tell the tale.
Yeah.
If that had happened, I would have really preferred to be a baboon swinging myself, you know, but that's fine. I'll be a spider. It is absolutely the smart move. No complaints there. So I think, we stay tight. We see what the bunkies do. Geralad's got to come. I think you're right. He's going to come shut that mushroom off eventually. And then we hit him.
Also, as a spider, you can go into Geralad's room as a spider.
Yeah, I could go in and just wander around and kind of explore and figure out maybe I could find some cool shit. But yeah.
I want to make a promise to you, Ted, right here. Okay.
Yes. Okay.
The big thing that I'm actually now worried about beyond Darius dying is Lyril's cloak being lost. So I'm in the first turn, right? The first use of it. I've got two more after this. I'll probably need one after I attack, but I'm going to save that third one and leave it unused so that if I die, which is extremely likely, you as a spider can go, you know, you run up, you grab the cloak as a goblin, obviously, put it on, use it, and then escape so that we don't lose that for the party. Does that make sense? I don't want to lose that for the party. It's too potent. It's too potent an item.
How long does the last three turns? Is that right?
Each use lasts three turns, and you get three uses out of it.
Got it. Yep.
I agree.
But you already got the pin, bitch. So don't think you're keeping it when my next character comes around. Me or David are going
to
get it.
I was going to say, I gave the cloak to you.
I know you did. That was nice. But you can have it next time. We'll pass it back between us.
Yeah. Well, again, I don't want to be too cavalier. Obviously, we're in a dangerous situation. I think what's interesting about this, to your point, Ted, is like, yeah, we were motivating it to move forward by opening the door. Which, in a meta sense.
In a meta game sense. David, that was a great move.
Yeah, it's
like it made things happen right there at the end of the episode. We didn't end like a bunch of chumps with our thumbs up our butts. You know, we did something good. But tactically, we should have just waited it out.
Well, and then this is why I think it's an interesting topic, right? To involve John in, which is like part of the triangulation of the conversation that we're engaging in is one in which we are trying to infer whether John is telegraphing that Garrelath's not coming anytime soon, or that John's rolling whether he'll come or not every couple turns, and we just don't know. And if he's telegraphing he's not coming anytime soon, opening the door is the only option, right? So what I'm doing in that moment isn't just trying to motivate forward. I'm trying to engage strategically with John. I'll just be very honest with everyone and figure out how he'll respond to that prompt, because it gives me information, right? Like, hence why I did it, right? It's in other words, it's not just like a, well, I guess it's all we can do. It's a, how can I get more information out of John sort of situation. Yeah.
Well, rather than make John, put John on the spot to answer that.
No, he doesn't have to.
I don't think he should. I would say what I was thinking at that moment when he was like, okay, you know, Garrelath kind of comes down and then he wanders away again. What John was telegraphing to me was that I am not going to hand you Garrelath. You are the players. You need to go get him.
Where I would agree and disagree there. Well, John can speak for himself because
So I do what I do with all of the off screen NPCs and factions and stuff like that is I just extrapolate what they would naturally do based upon their desires and motives and how they operate. Garrelath is the kind of person, as you probably already determined, that he has his baboons do shit for him.
Yes.
So his obvious thing is like, if he's up there in the Ruby Throne Chamber in the Hall of Judgment and he hears the Shrieker go off, he immediately orders his baboons to go fucking check that shit out. He is definitely not going to go by himself. Right. 100%. So he did the smart thing and just stayed behind, and he's waiting for the baboons to come and tell him what happened. Now, I was hoping that I telegraphed that there were multiple opportunities for you to stop and try to eavesdrop on what Garrelath was saying or what the forum baboons were saying, right? Like, they were always at a distance, but you were being cautious, which was probably smart, and staying away, but you didn't decide to proactively go and investigate to hear like what they were discussing and what's going on. Like, that whole thing in the western hallway, like, what the heck is going on there, right? 100%. like the baboons got rebuffed, the Garrelath got rebuffed, but maybe, you know, they were ordered down there originally by Garrelath immediately upon him returning to his domain. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, he didn't waste any time. He went right to the Hall of Judgment. He said something and those baboons were sent down there immediately. Right? And then he himself, after the baboons ran away, went down there to check it out with Sisko. Right? Mm-hmm. So if you know that he's the kind of person that sends others to do his bidding, but he felt it necessary to go down there himself with Sisko, then obviously something that there to the west is of importance, right? So anyways, 100%. I'm just saying, like, I am not playing a game where I'm not going to, like if your plan had involved Garrelath coming back to his chambers for some reason, then I just would have, if that naturally would have happened, it would have happened. But I'm not playing a game where, like, I'm not going to hand him to, like, if you had come up with a plan that handed him to you on a platter, I would have done that, but you didn't come up with a plan.
And what I would say there, sorry.
Well, that's what I really meant, John, not like, you know, okay, you guys are sitting there waiting for him, so I guess I'll hand him to you because otherwise we're just going to sit here and twiddle our thumbs.
No. Yeah.
I was prepared to wait until it was bedtime and he would naturally come along. that doesn't make for very fun play. Totally get it. And I could see that you were not going to accelerate his arrival just for our convenience.
Correct. Yeah.
That's what I was getting at. And
yeah,
and
okay. Yeah.
So David, please.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, y'all kind of engaged with it already. What I was going to say in response to Ed and wrap it into what we've already sort of semi-resolved was, yeah, like it's not, I think it's an interesting topic because not that we weren't doing this, but like sitting and waiting is not refusing the adventure if waiting is the tool for success. And I think the instinct is to, especially if you're in like a more narrative-based game, to feel like you are refusing the adventure by refusing, for instance, John giving us that new information, as if John giving us that information was him telling us, if you want to do this, you have to engage with the terms that I'm giving you. I don't read it. Not that you said that that's the case, but I don't read that at all as the case. I read this as like a neutral environment in which John is giving us information. Whether we are enjoying ourselves or bored is immaterial to the fact that like what we're not doing is not making a decision. And I think that this is really key because what it feels like is we're not making decisions when we don't respond to things. But that's not what's going on. We're making a very calculated decision.
Absolutely.
For ourselves, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And that doesn't mean it's the right decision, right?
It just means that the decision that you made is passive, which is fine. It's a safe thing to do. Yeah.
Sometimes the hardest thing to do is to not act.
This is the whole thing.
But here's the thing that is actually like killing me now. The way John phrased that is that we played the little caution by not investigating the sound, like the conversation, right? But then we did not play the big caution by setting off the trap. We were like, it's kind of like a Pennywise pound foolish thing. We're like, nah, it's too risky to go over there and listen to see what they're talking about. But let's just set off the trap and just see what happens. Well, right? Like, we're just like,
YOLO. I'll argue with you. I mean, I your point is totally well taken. I'll argue with you again, though. Our safety is predicated not on whether we set an alarm off or not, but where we are positioned.
I know.
So by moving there and doing that, if we do get caught, you are dead, right? Yeah. Like,
no, I'm not arguing.
No, I agree with
what
you.
Doing is like fun. What I'm actually saying is like the way John phrased that just sent a cold shiver down my spine
Yeah. And to be clear too, like you, I'm very impressed with like the plans you came up with. The way that you mitigated being able to be detected was pretty sweet because you've been like you're nose to nose with some of those baboons, and you were nose to nose with Cisco too whenever he was down there. You know, it's you played it out very smart with your invisibility and polymorph and all that sort of stuff. So it's a bad situation, but you handled it really well. So if you had decided to wait until Garlet wanted to go to bed, yes, eventually he would have retired to his chambers. And then I wouldn't have belabored the point. You know what I mean? Like I wouldn't have like, taken that long. There is probably, in fact, there's almost 100% chance that I would not have time skipped immediately to Garlet returning. Like there's baboons running all over the place. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't want you to get too deep in past tense here. Cause we may start the next session doing that, John.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
What I'm saying, though,
is like it's okay to just say like I wait, and if there is enough, and then I'll just determine like how much time actually passes, and we'll just skip to whenever the action picks up again. This is not advanced DMing. You know what I mean?
No.
Actually, was close enough to Cisco to teabag him. Like, yeah.
I'm saying is that just because of the events of this episode, I don't want you guys to think that you can't make long-term, you know, like you can't make decisions like that appear boring on the surface. You know, they do what you got to do to survive, man. You know what I mean?
What the hell are we going to do with Matt when he comes back?
I think he should take all the money and open an inn and retire from this terrible life.
It's a good question. He might have to be hanging out back with the retainers, maybe.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah. But then maybe he'll be your ace in the hole as a result, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you could make him play Elizabeth, but it seems unfair to not let him play his own character. But
I doubt he would mind.
Yeah, I don't think he would mind. But
no, he'll play a PC. We got to stick to those rules.
Yeah. I mean, there's not to belabor it further. I'm very excited. It's a good conversation about like what an adventure is. And I don't think it's over yet, but I might. Oh,
it's not.
I think there's a lot of really fun. There's a lot of really fun and creative opportunities we still have. So I would not see the fact that these guys are crawling around us as the door closing.
I would express some dismay to discover that the forearm baboons are greater than 7 hit dice. That is disappointing news, I have to say.
Which is why I refuse to fight. If we're in that position, I'm just running. I'm running as fast as good.
Yeah. I don't really need to tell you. You've witnessed it. They are not nice creatures.
Mm-hmm. Guys, I'm going to tell you one thing, too. I am 97% convinced that they are not under any kind of magical influence of Garilad. I am like 98%. There's a possibility, but they just love that fucking guy. And all the other little baboons follow his example. So maybe if we were able to kill Garilad, maybe something happens. Maybe the little guys make their morale checks and run away. But the big ones might just go into a killing frenzy because we killed Dad. And then, you know what I'm saying? We might not get out. Like, just cutting the head off the snake might just piss off the rest of the snake.
For sure. Okay. For sure. I'll say this. Very well taken, which is my biggest worry too. The information we have that complicates that is obviously the anti-magic realm.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Which in and of itself, like, makes no sense if there isn't something affiliated with them for him to be so dogged about, right? In other words, if he only extended that warning to Njal while he was being manipulated and not the apes, that would be one thing. But it is a wide order, which tells us he doesn't want the apes in there. The other thing is, I hate to extrapolate too far, but when I posed as Isocrates when we were running the first time and Tresco kicked down the door, right? And I was, what are you doing, you fool? You know, like, Garilad's under attack, et cetera, et cetera. And this is the case with, like, most, even like the depression that he's exhibiting because Garilad's gone, it is not a natural amount. Right. It is not I'm bummed Dad's out of town for a couple of days. It is I have a supernatural emotional attachment. I mean, it just is in the way that we experience it. Like him being like, I thought Cisco might, you know, go for him for Dad. I'm the guy, right? Says a lot about their capacity to still have internal divisions and have no ability to see Garilad as flawed. Mm. Right. I could be wrong, but like, I do think the specific word choice is pretty significant in all of that.
Is awakening animals still a thing in OSE? Because that was something that happened in AD&D, and you could awaken plants, you could awaken trees. They would gain class levels or intelligence and stuff like that. I don't know if that's a thing in OSE. Like, if Garilad is a powerful druid and awakened the big baboons, right? So, and then they would probably love him. And then maybe going into the anti-magic room would be a bad thing, right? Because then it might make them normal baboons again. Or them lose their intelligence, at least, you know?
Well, we know that they're affiliated with the Thothian clerics.
They were, right? Right.
Which I only say because, like, a druid isn't a cleric, right? Like, if there's any sort of, like, obedience to their, like, lore, right? Or their, like, progenitors, however they were created, naturally or otherwise, like a druid wouldn't necessarily be like, I don't know what I'm trying to say here. I don't know. No, it's all speculation. We'll find out.
Oh, hey guys, I wanted to tell you, I was listening to episode 1 today. And the rumors that we got were actually really, really cool. Do you guys remember at all what the rumor was for Kerbold Khan? We got one.
It's in our notes. I wrote it in our notes. Hold on.
That a mad wizard rules the second level and has an army of ghouls who gather like body parts and blood for him to keep him alive, and that he pretends to be useful, and then the ghouls drop and, you know, come and get you.
And everyone scoffed when I put a lizard in his mouth. All right.
That's a rumor.
It's a rumor. It could be a rumor he sowed, for all we know, which is an interesting thing.
I wonder if the second level part is what we know. Another one is that they told us, God damn it, the rumors were like, the broken head has a way down into the dungeon in their basement, and you can go down there and it takes you to the first level. And we totally forgot about that. I know I did from the time that we, you know, dealt with the ghost. got murdered by like the other ghost, ran and fought the giant plant monster. We could have gone right to the broken head and just been like, yeah. Got a way down or something. We could just go down.
Except that I thought we did ask them like right away about getting into the dungeon, and they played coy. They did not tell us about their own interest. Yeah,
I haven't gotten that far. I'm gonna have to re-listen to the whole damn series. Well, again.
Not too long ago, we discovered that like they had an entrance, but they only give it to people who they favor, right?
Yeah, and we hadn't done anything to, you know.
That's a conclusion you drew anyways. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, my point being is like, I'm sitting there listening to the first episode and I'm going, wow, we really like, I'm not missed things, but like the big giant entrance on the side of the cliff face, it's got the marble lintel rumor said it led right to the troll markets or something like that. Or maybe it goes to, you know,
if that I remember.
If we just decided to go in there, we would have like,
that goes in the form of set. If you just want to make that clear.
I'll say this.
Well, we talked about it and we didn't see a way up and we saw the other way up, so we decided to do that.
Yep.
That's how that went.
I'd also say in our defense, not that it's about whether we're good, bad, or indifferent, but
you're on trial.
I'm on trial. There's a twofold aspect of this, which is like we've been playing this forever.
It's great.
And that alone, like a fun part of being a GaryCon was people being like, you remember an episode? And I was like, I don't remember.
Yeah,
I know that episode. I'm you like guys know episode. How many, like this has been years of me playing it. I wish I had the capacity to. I love that it is a memorable thing, but it's like, it's too much to track, right?
We could actually leave it on that. No, I should tell people out there that if you're coming to the series new or you're re-listening and you make a comment on YouTube and be like, When you said this, what did you mean? You're gonna have to clarify because
it's been a long time.
Yeah,
I should binge it though.
64 episodes. Yeah. That's like 128 hours minimum.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot of content for us. And thank God that a lot of you guys have been taking copious notes. But even with the notes, you still have to refer back to them. So it can be hard sometimes, but it's good that we have some folks with good recall.
I never take notes, baby, but I'm always listening.
I know. You have amazing recall, considering. Yeah.
This is the game. Oh.
No, what did you say, Ted?
Well, I was going to say, this is the game of Dungeons & Dragons I always wanted to play, John.
Nice. All right.
For damn sure. Like, seriously. I remember, I think we talked about this one time in a detox, is that original Underdark box set for Forgotten Realms.
Sure, yeah.
And it was these huge maps, and I was like, this is freaking great. It's a whole campaign just in one dungeon. And then they weren't, like, really statted out hardly at all.
Yeah, Undermountain, yeah. It's annoying. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was disappointed, and then this came along, and, you know, 30 years later, and it's awesome. This is what I always wanted to do, so...
Yeah, absolutely. There was the issue I had with Underdark. Even when I was a kid, when I got Undermountain, I could tell that it was sort of the core of it was cool. Like every place that they had detail was really, really awesome and flavorful. Yeah. But it got away with advertising itself as like this unbelievably complex with all this, you know, amazing stuff. And like half of it wasn't even, it was just empty. Yeah. And it was annoying because like I feel like the excuse was, that you know, every dungeon has to have its empty corridors or else like the actual inhabited corridors aren't as quite as interesting, you know. But Ardvul approves that you can have an extremely dense dungeon and you can still have empty rooms and empty corridors and a lot of room to move around. Like not every single room is keyed, right? There is some empty space. It's just I feel like I shouldn't be ragging on it. Undermountain is actually pretty fun for what's there, but I don't think it holds a candle. In fact, I don't think any mega dungeon really holds a candle to Ardenvul. I've seen my fair share. So,
but you know, the thing about that is they made that 30 some odd years ago. Like it was probably the biggest undertaking of that sort.
It was.
No doubt. Yeah, I should. I feel bad now that I'm ragging on it.
I didn't mean to sound like I was ragging on it.
Yeah, everybody knows this. This is something that I remember talking about with my friend Steve in, like, you know, high school. We were just like, well, all shit's empty.
I bought it in high school, and I was like, all right, this is cool. And I said, well, I can put some of my own stuff in here, and that's a ton of work particularly, you know, when you've got homework to do and stuff like that. And, you know, after like a ton of work and I had statted out like one tiny little section of this giant map, I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
I
can't like, run this. What are we paying you for? Right. Sort of thing.
Yeah. I can't run this.
Yeah.
So I think it's too big to like get deep in because we're already along, but I will say I can never know the intention of the authors, but it is an interesting reflection of like cultures of play in the sense that like,
oh, I thought we lost John.
Probably lost me.
Yeah, for a second.
In that, if all of those rooms had been empty, and I haven't read it, so I don't know, and there were like tables for generation and stuff like that, the intentionality of leaving them empty in a culture of play where they want you to be ad hocing and building stuff like OD&D was really, really about that too, isn't about giving you too much. Like they don't want to fill that because they want you to be not statting out in prep, but like figuring out on the fly. I don't know that that's the case there, but like that's where those, like those tables become really significant.
It's a good point. Those tools were in place in that product, but the problem is there was like having that design as a philosophy abutted right up against the fully detailed aspects of Undermound that were there. So it was for like a teenager, it's very sort of mixed messages. You know, it's like you're buying 100%. This product and you're like, oh sweet, I could just open this up and run it. You know, and you can't. There's like a ton of work. You know,
Which is sort
of like the difference between like B1 and B2. Like B1 in Search of the Unknown was really put your DM skills to the test because it wasn't populated. Like you had to like do that yourself, but it was expected that you were going to do that. B2 was all the work was basically done for you. So, I feel like Undermount was sort of like a combination of both of those, you know, so it all depends on your style. It's fine.
No, I think it's a good point is hybridizing can kind of confuse the message though, right? This is about communicating how to use the tools you're given. And if it's not clear, then that's the problem more than.
Yeah. I could be talking out my ass too, because it's like, I'm 30 always years talking since out my I, ass. Since I've got the box set like literally right here, but I haven't pulled it out for like 30 years. So it's, you know, it's been,
we need to update our tagline from the most criminally underwatched to talking out our asses.
Talking our asses. Exactly. Pretending like we know things
about every day, authority. That's every day. Baby.
When are you getting out of jail, bud? They letting you out tomorrow?
As soon as you post my bail, bro.
Oh, sorry.